Okay. In the beginning. What better place to start than in the beginning, right? So, somebody tell me in brief, before we get to this chart, what is Genesis about? In brief.
Story of creation.
Story of creation, okay. Say again. History. It is definitely a history book. How many years are we talking about?
Before human civilization in the early times.
Okay, the beginnings, right? Our origins.
Right.
Okay, giving the first law and the first command that was given, we see very early on. Sin. How it got here, right? How it started. And what it is. And what is sin by definition?
Separation from God.
That's the consequence. Yeah.
Missing the mark.
It's a disobedience. 1 John 3 and verse 4, sin is transgression of the law by definition. And it is missing that mark. It is disobedience. And there's not a sin that we commit that is not against God's will. I mean, that's the very definition of what it is. So we can't ever fool ourselves in thinking it's not. We see the beginnings of that. The command that they disobeyed was what? Don't eat of that certain tree. They could eat of everything else. And we won't spend the time to get into that story about it, but we know there's the beginning of sin. Anything else need to add in here? What is so significant about Genesis that we need to know it? Call of Abraham, and more important than the call itself was what?
Promises.
And one of those promises in particular affects us today, right? Which one? Speak up. Make a great nation. I don't think that one necessarily affects us as much. I think there's one a little bit more important than that one. Through your seed, all nations would be blessed. Because who was that, Jessica? The Christ, right? She said it. You didn't hear it earlier. The Christ. That promise that through your seed, that Paul clarifies in Galatians 3 and verse 16, he said seed and not seeds, which meant it was only one that was going to be that, and that was the Christ. And how does that affect us today? How important is that to us today? It's pretty much everything, isn't it? Without that, where would we be? You know, lost in our sins. Without
Israelites are.
Without the Christ, right? We don't have a Savior. And, you know, if you go to the book of Hebrews, they were trying to go back to that old law, and Hebrew writer was reminding them, when you do that, there's no other sacrifice. This was it.
The promise was initially stated in Genesis 3, where God was pronouncing the consequences of the sin of Adam and Eve, and about what would happen. And of course, he said to the woman, in your seed,
I agree that that's the first prophecy about the Christ, but not necessarily about the salvation part of it. The promised Abraham was really the first mention of prophecy about the salvation part of it. Just what Richard was talking about in chapter 3 and verse 15, when God was basically handing down the consequences for all who were involved, including the serpent, one of the things that he mentioned was, you shall bruise his heel, but he's going to crush your head. I'm paraphrasing heavily there. But that was talking about the fact that, yes, the Christ would die, but he's going to rise again, and he's going to, as the Hebrew writer would say, he would take the power of death from the one who held it, that is the devil. So he crushed the head of Satan by gaining that victory over death. Okay, what else do we see in this book that's of any significance to us today as far as the historical record? Noah? What happened there? Again, in brief.
Well,
Flood. Why the flood? What was God's determination? What did he see that made him make that determination? One phrase in particular. You know, thoughts of men were evil continuously. That's pretty bad. You know, if you ever, I have to remind myself this every once in a while. I don't know if God's standard is still the same today, but when you ever look around, you think, wow, it just can't get any worse than this. Look around. Are there more than 8 people in here? So it's not as bad as it was in Noah's time. You think you got it bad? There were only 8 people out of probably about half the population of what the world is today. I know that may sound a little shocking, but do a little numbers crunching and you'll figure out that the earth population could have been about 3 billion. I used to think it was like a couple hundred thousand, but then I sat down and put the numbers together and the age of men, average age, it's very possible it could have been 3 billion people on earth. Now, 3 billion, 8? So today we've got 7 billion, so let's double, 16. Is there more than 16 people in here? You know more than 16 people that are pretty good people that try to serve God? Sure. Their thoughts are not evil continuously. So, I don't know if God's using the same standard, but we don't have it quite so bad. Yes? Okay. Yeah, the promise that was made after the flood. Although some groups have stolen the rainbow today to make it something a lot worse than what it was intended to be, that was a promise and a reminder to whom?
To all people. To
God. It was to God. If you go back and read it, God said, this is a reminder. When I see this, I will be reminded. Now, of course, we were going to remember it too. And the promise was he wasn't going to destroy the world again by flood. So there was another promise of God that we can trust in. And so whenever the rains start coming and the hurricane's blowing and get lots of rain, it's not going to be that much. Maybe more than what we want, but it's not going to be a worldwide flood. Hey, what else in Genesis, just briefly before we start getting into the chart? Yep.
It's not like science says, you know, all of a sudden a big boom and they showed up, or evolution. He said, this is going to happen on this day and that day and that day, and it was as he said.
I think I was sitting with one of my daughters today looking at some information and filling out ACT test information ahead of time. One of the questions was, would you be interested in reading books about the origins of mankind? And I'm like, we looked at each other like, what, the Bible? Sure. I'm sure that's not what they meant, but that's man's idea. You know, we had some big explosion out in the middle of nowhere just by chance, and here we are. But yet the Bible tells us the word from the Creator, how He created, how we all got here. And yet we're ready to discredit this and say it's not believable. It's kind of like one of these memes you see on Facebook every once in a while. So you're telling me you can't believe a book it was written 2,000 years ago, but you believe men today who talk about something that happened 4 billion years ago. That's the wisdom of man. Jess?
Another thing is that in the history of like Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, with Judah is Jesus'
The descendants of Abraham, especially down to the 12 tribes of Israel, and one in particular she noted was Judah. And what tribe? Why is that a significant tribe to us? That's where the Christ came from. And again, this is all put in place, and this is one thing I want us to try to keep in our minds, whatever book we're reading in the Bible, is to see the events that we're looking at, the people that we're looking at. God put these here for a reason. And one of the clearest things to me, what I see in the book of Genesis in particular, is all these people who are tied to that salvation plan in some way.
Oh, yeah.
There's just, I mean, the people that we study in the book of Genesis, they're all tied to this salvation plan in some way, if at the very least, the lineage that they're a part of. Derek?
I'd say the Tower of Babel is an extremely significant event.
Sure.
I know of no other religion that attempts to explain how we came up with different, how we got different languages, different cultures, how we were spread out across the globe. The Bible does do that.
So yep.
Very unique.
Yeah, the best I've ever heard of explanations of where all the languages came from is they get back to like 3 or 4 root languages, but beyond that, they don't have any reasoning. They don't have any explanation for that. They'll try to give some partial credit to say, oh, it had to come from the Middle East area. Well, yes, it did, didn't it? we have the story here. And what's fascinating to me is how readily we're so willing to discredit all this when it gives us so much information that we could run with and find out some great things. You know, whenever scientists today say, if you believe in the Bible, you can't be a good scientist. Anybody ever heard of Sir Isaac Newton? Benjamin Franklin? Galileo? Da Vinci? These people all believed in God, and they were great scientists and artists. And that's nothing but arrogance, saying that we're smart, so smart we don't need God, we don't need this superstitious book. Well, there's so much good information in here, even scientific evidence, statements about nature. I mean, the rain cycle is mentioned in the book of Ecclesiastes, but when was that discovered?
A long
time ago. About 300 years ago, maybe.
Well, the water.
Well, that wasn't the rain cycle, though. Rain cycle is talking about the evaporation, going up into the clouds, then going back down in the rivers, back down to the ocean. It is all tied together, but man is so unwilling to look at the Bible to see that these things were here. I mean, the circle of the earth. There's at least 2 places in the Bible where it talks about the circle of the earth, but how many years did man believe the earth was flat? If you go so far, you'd fall off the edge of the earth. You know, I know people back in Arkansas. I think if you go past the Arkansas state line, you'll fall off the edge of the earth. I'm kidding, just a little. Richard?
Another thing that's pretty important, we find a type of offering.
Type of offering.
As Abraham said, you go offer your own son.
Genesis chapter 22. Sure. Except he didn't have to stop before it happened. He was willing to go all the way. Of course, Abraham was willing to go too. He just didn't have to. Yep. Okay, let's get into, unless anybody has any further comment. Nope. Okay. Well, make sure I got to check on my sides because I tend to miss the sides. So, again, I'm going to remind you people in the middle, if I don't see somebody over here, wave your hand and point or something, because I'm probably going to overlook somebody. Okay, let's start with some of the key verses then. And again, the purpose of looking for a key verse or verses, it could be an entire chapter if you feel like that's the way it is. But what we're looking for in the key verse or verses is something that sums up in short what the book is about. Now, with Genesis, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, because you've got so many different stories going on here. Again, you've got about 2,400 years of history here, and it's kind of hard to sum that up into one verse. But now here's where I throw it out to you. What are some of your key verses? And I'm going to enlarge this a little bit so we can make this readable.
1:1.
I would agree with that one. Well, if I can get my writer working here. Let's see here. Yeah, I need something thicker. Give me a second here. I thought I was all ready, but I wasn't. There we go. 1:1. Anybody else? And what is 1:1? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. To me, it's kind of hard to skip over that one as far as importance. Richard?
On one hand, the same thing about that verse, if you go into some in-depth study and you look at the Hebrew word for God, Elohim is a plural.
A plural.
Now, which it could back up what John said, the cordial and the...
Well, I think you could even go down to verse 26, let us. Let us make God, let us make man in our image. Our. What's our? Singular or plural?
Plural.
Easy. Okay, any other verses? 12, 1 through 9, and what is happening here? Okay, promises to Abraham. Those are pretty significant. Again, if nothing else, for the one promise that through his seed all nations would be blessed. Ken?
Genesis 9:16.
And what is that one?
The promise of the rainbow, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all the flesh on the earth.
Okay. Six to three, and what is that again? The shortening of man's years.
That happened three times, didn't it?
I'm not sure I would agree with you that that's what he's saying. I've always taken that to mean that that's how long God gave men before the flood. Ron? Okay.
The marriage between man and woman.
2 and verse 24.
Yes.
Hard to do this without touching my hand somewhere else on here and then I make it go somewhere else. Okay, 2:24. That is definitely one of the beginnings. And I would agree that that is a significant point for us. And I would even say it's always been. And when you go to Matthew 19, when Jesus was asked by the religious leaders, you know, can a man put away his wife for any reason? He went back to this verse. And just quoting it, then concluded, you know, if somebody ever says today that you can't use necessary inference, point them to that verse. Because Jesus read the verse and then concluded, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Where do you read that in Genesis 2:24? Is it stated plainly? No, you have to infer that from what is said. That a man is to leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. From that statement, Jesus said, what God has joined together, let not man separate. Was it a right conclusion? You bet it was if Jesus made it. So, yeah, it's very significant. Derek?
I would say 2:25.
Okay.
2:3:7. So it's the state of man at creation through the fall of man.
Okay. Yeah, it's again, this is one of those things that it's kind of hard to skip over, the entrance of sin into the world. Pretty significant because how did that change the history of mankind?
Forever
altered it, right? Until time ends, it's going to affect because, Romans 3 and verse 23.
Because man could have lived an eternity in the Garden of Eden as long as he hadn't sinned, possibly.
Yep. I think that was God's intent, you know, because when they were punished, they were sent out of the garden, and the cherubim was sent to guard the way, and the statement was, lest he eat of the tree and live forever. And remember, they had access to that tree before, so it was God's intent that they eat of the tree and live forever. Until sin entered in. 3:15. And that is what Richard referred to earlier, the first prophecy regarding the Messiah. That's the first one.
I also thought
39 in verse 9.
A lot of people might not take that, but it, when it, he talks, we're talking about Joseph.
flee. Is that the verse? Okay. 39:9, and her statement on that was, that's one of those statements that's a clarifier for us, that we're not just sinning against somebody else, we're sinning against God. Now, if he was thinking only in human terms, he would have been thinking, oh, well, nobody else finds out about this, but he knew what sin was really about. Sinned against God. Okay, any other verses? Bobby?
Chapter 50.
15?
Chapter 50.
50, okay.
Verse 20.
Verse 20. And
Joseph says, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good.
Okay.
And it kind of highlights the providence of God in guiding these events through this whole book.
And since you said that, I'm going to throw another one up there. Same 45 verses 5 through 8, where he first reveals himself to his brothers. And says the same thing. And I think you're right. The revelation of God's interaction with man. What were his brother's plans? First of all, they wanted to kill him, but at the very least, just get rid of him. It wasn't for good, right?
Yeah.
But what about God?
Well, yeah, but God had a hand in it. So, like you said, but now do not therefore be grieved or angry. You sold me here, but God sent me before to preserve life for you.
So that's the thing about providence, isn't it? We don't. Did his brothers know that this was God's plan for Joseph and for all Israel? Really?
He didn't know
for sure. You know, up until they came, there was no mention whatsoever. And how many people would, in the prison, like he was, be thinking, wow, this isn't really where I wanted to be. He had an opportunity, and where did it get him? Eventually got him to that high position where he was able to save his own people, which were, of course, the Israelites.
And from his family, became a very great nation.
Sure.
Sure.
Yep. Jeff?
It's also kind of a foreshadowing of Christ, too.
Sure. Right. Isn't that funny how that works? You know, a lot of times man has this terrible plan to do some terrible things, and yet God will use those terrible things to make something good come out of it, very good come out of it. You know, the death of an innocent man, who would say that was good? Well, we would not say that was good, because we can't foresee anything good coming out of that. But yet after the fact, and when he was raised up, then we figured out that was good. Eric?
This is a little abstract, but Genesis 5, verse 24, Enoch walked with God and he was not, for God took him. Maybe a hint of some kind of the eternal nature of man.
Okay.
Before that time, we see death.
Right.
And then Enoch is tabled.
And
two people that didn't die.
Who was the other? Elijah. Close. Started with an E, right? Elijah, yeah. But you're right. That's one of those things you got to stop and think about, though, right? If you just kind of skim over that, you might miss the fact of what's really saying there, that eternal nature of man. It didn't say Enoch ceased to exist, did it? No, he walked with God, and he was.
Walking with him this day, or we know.
Yeah, Richard? Okay.
Where God changed Jacob's name to Israel.
I was waiting on somebody to say that, and I was about to mention it myself. The changing of Jacob's name to Israel, which again begins a significant point in that this name became a nation. You know, his 12 sons, the 12 tribes, not just his sons, of course, Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, came the 12 tribes of Israel. And how much of the history of the Old Testament do they take up? Pretty much for everything from Exodus on, right? Yeah. And really, it backs up to Abraham where that promise was made. So pretty good chunk of the Bible has to do with them. So kind of significant. Okay, any others? I think I've got maybe one more here that.
Chapter 11, the first part of chapter 11 about the nations.
Okay, chapter 11 of the Tower of Babel, and I think somebody mentioned that earlier, but somewhere else, and I didn't write that down. Chapter 11, first 9 verses, the vision of the languages. Richard?
All came about because of an eagle brought.
Yep. Man wanted to make a name for himself. Who should we be worried about making the name for? God. But yet, man keeps trying, right? Right. I got one more here that I haven't heard, and that is 22, verse 18. And this kind of goes along with some of the statements that were made earlier about this is the context of Abraham making the sacrifice, being willing to make the sacrifice of Isaac upon Mount Moriah. And after the fact, when the angel of the Lord came to him, said, "In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice." In the New Testament, it said he was justified when? Or how? How was Abraham justified according to what's said in the New Testament? By faith. Is there any contradiction there? Doing it by faith and obeying?
You obeyed by faith.
What is faith? Is it just saying, "Yes, God, I believe that you're God"? What's some synonyms for faith? Maybe that'll help us. What's that?
I'm thinking about John 3:36.
What's some synonyms for faith?
Belief.
Acceptance
of his promises.
Acceptance.
Trust.
I think that's a big one right there. Trust, to me. Because if you trust somebody, let's put it in terms we could probably understand. If you're, back when I was in the basic training, they let us rappel down the cliff of Medicine Bluff, Oklahoma. 300-foot sheer cliff. Now, if you're going over the edge with that rope, what are you going to have? Faith, trust, right? You're going to have to trust that rope works, not going to break, and it's only 3/4 inch diameter, if that. What about the equipment that hooks you up to it? You got to trust it too, right? What about the guy who's instructing you about what to do? But you have to trust him too? Okay, now you've trusted all these things, what's incumbent upon you to get down to the bottom safely? If you've ever gone rappelling, this is the hardest part, is going over the edge and leaning yourself at a 90-degree angle to that cliff where you're level with the ground. But you've got to do something, right? And you've got to do what you've been told to do, use the equipment in the right way, else you're not going to make it to the bottom safely. But the trust is more than just saying, "Okay, I believe that that's right," and then going and doing whatever you want. Or just staying at the top of the cliff. That's not trust. Is it? Am I misunderstanding? Is it trust to say, "Oh, I believe you, but I'm not going to do that"? Why? Well, I'm not real sure. Well, then you don't trust, do you? Trust is saying, "Yes, God, I believe everything you say, and I'm going to do exactly what you say because I believe your word is true." It's more than just saying, "Yes, I believe God." And Abraham is a great example of that. Here it says that now I know, and I'm going to, through your seed, I'm going to bless all nations because you obey. Thank you. Go ahead. And there's God's definition. That's the one we need to believe in, right? It's not the dictionary definitions. And I get You know, usually I love dictionaries, but the modern day definition of faith makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck because I just do not like it. It's belief without evidence. That's not faith. Not God's. The substance. What's substance? Something that's real, right? What's evidence? If you're going to a trial, the evidence is what's going to convince you or not, right? It's proof. It's not just saying, well, I believe it no matter what. It's believe it because. Derek, I see your hand again. That is a good point, and I wish I could remember the verse right off the top of my head. There's actually a statement in the New Testament where I believe Jesus refers to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the term that he uses is not Yah, but Adonai, which means Lord, which referred to him. The Lord did that, not Yah or Yahweh. So, yeah, very significant, not just God the Father.
Another significant event was the birth of Ishmael.
Birth of Ishmael. Why is that significant today?
Well, the trouble came back.
Well, that's pretty broad there, but we'll say a lot of troubles. And, you know, at least in my lifetime, I'm 50 plus years old.
God promised Hagar that he would make a great nation.
He would.
Of his seed, because he was the seed of Abraham.
Yep. It just wasn't the seed.
Right. It wasn't the seed. It was a seed that would be against the hand of man, of the other.
Okay. And there was always going to be conflict, and even that was prophesied. There was always going to be conflict between the two seeds. The Arabic nations, which is basically the nations of Ishmael, and the Jewish nations, the Semite nations, prophesied by God, there would always be conflict. So we shouldn't think in our modern days that the establishment of the Jewish state in 1947 is something new.
Or that we're going to fix it.
Yeah. As much as we would like to, you know, if God says there's always going to be conflict, guess what? There's always going to be conflict. As much as we would like to end it.
They've settled that problem. I'm not even tired of that. I'm sure there's others that probably have taken peace in the Middle East.
Temporarily. It's always temporarily, though, because there's always somebody that's not going to like the other side. Because it's always us and them. And that's for both sides. I don't think anybody's innocent on that. It's always an us versus them. Yep. That's going to happen every time when man tries to improve on God's plans or think that we've got a better answer. I see another hand, Richard. All these distant relations, that go back to Abraham ended up being sources of conflict with the Israelites pretty much all throughout their history.
Well, every one of them was a tribe that the Israelites had a conflict with.
Right. Yeah, the Edomites were who? Esau. So.
Moabites,
Midianites, you know, all these nations that were surrounding them. And you know, how often do we see them in the conflicts throughout Israel's history? Pretty pretty much all the way through. All right, let's go ahead and get to the chart then. Let's look at chapters 1 through 3. Somebody sum that up for me. What's going on in the first three chapters? Okay. Oops. Let me get my pen working here. For some reason, this isn't writing in black. So I apologize if that's not showing up as well as what I would like it to. What else we got in the first three chapters? Marriage. What else? Pretty significant event in chapter 3. Sin. Yep. And just those three chapters right there, there's a lot there, isn't there, that affects mankind from there on out. You know, obviously the creation, we wouldn't have anything if that didn't happen. We wouldn't be here. Then marriage that established. What did that give us, mankind in general? What did that give to us?
Boundaries.
Boundaries. Good way to put it.
Family.
Family. Okay. What does that tell us about what God wants? I like that word, boundaries. Is, you know, one of the really sad things in human history in the last couple of millennia is those who have taken God's word and twisted it and said that sex is a dirty thing. I mean, the Roman Catholic Church for centuries has taught that sex is a sinful act, even within the marriage. That it's strictly for procreation. And that even, that you look up some of the Catholic doctrines, it teaches that after a sex act, even in a marriage, you have to go offer some sort of penance for that. It's looked at as a dirty thing. God's never said that. He set, and I like that word again, boundaries. Hebrews 13:4 tells us, you know, the bed of adultery is defilement. But within the marriage, it's a glorious thing. It's an honorable thing. Somehow we skipped over those. But sex itself is not a prohibition. It's not a sin because God, again, that term is a really good term for this. It's the boundaries of where God says it's okay. Bobby?
Let's say that this really creates the core that holds society together. When you have a family, everything revolves around that. And you can see in our own society, others,
yep,
when they begin to let that fall apart, everything disintegrates.
Yep. And it really is sad to see what our society is doing to the institution of marriage and the family as God intended it. And it, you know, whether it's from divorce, man's idea of divorce and how it can be done, not what God said, but what they want it to be. And then nowadays, they're redefining what a family is. You know, what's a mom and what's a dad? You know that there's a serious effort going on right now in our country to eliminate gender terms for the very purpose of making marriage be whomever with whomever. I mean, they're in I believe it's in the state of Kentucky, they're trying to push through in the public school system all gender references removed. Now, it didn't take a brain surgeon to figure out where they're headed with this and why. They're trying to destroy the very foundation of the family and what God said makes a family. And once we decide we can determine what it is, then, you know, where do you stop? But this is what this gives to us, again, is God's boundaries, God's intent of what a family should be and a marriage should be. And I agree, Bobby, it's really the foundation of society. If we destroy that, the rest of society is kaput. I mean, sad to say, that's where our own country's headed. I really tremble for the future of this country, where it's going to be. My own kids, I'm seeing things I didn't think I'd see in my lifetime. Who knows what they're going to see? All right, that's all of our time for today. We'll go ahead and get back to the chart next week. and spend all of our time on that, try to get through the Genesis chart. Can't guarantee we'll get any further than that. We'll get into at least the questions on pages 4 and 5. Appreciate all your comments.